Blog Talk Radio.
It's like wrangling cats to me. Good evening and welcome to Erie House Oldy Timey Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're here along with...
I am no cat. It is I, God the Gold, wherever I am, if you will. Okay.
That was some nice static.
It was.
Static?
You just blew up the studio.
Yeah. I blew up how?
I need to quit saying Dale K from Spook Show. When was the last time I did one? It's getting up like 4 or 5 years now.
1936. It was a good year.
Yeah, I think it was a talkie. I don't know. Maybe I should give up on the
question. Talkie. Question before we go too far into this: are you guys having problems with my Bluetooth connection thing?
Not yet, but if you want to try.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was just
on
what?
That first meow was a little off. But
meow? I don't know. Beats me.
I don't know. That's okay. We're all here. Fog's Bane's here.
My. Okay. Yeah.
Oh. And tonight and tonight only, there is not going to be any Gar's morals of the story. I'm sorry, I hate to say it, but for tonight and tonight only, it'll be Gar's pearls of wisdom. We're not gonna let any material go to waste. No.
Good.
Tonight it's pearls of wisdom.
Pearls of wisdom. Nice.
Just a real quick sidebar. So this week I had to talk to a whole bunch of Cox advanced technical support staff, right, to try and get my internet working. One of them was out of Rhode Island, New York, and I swear I was talking to Fogsbane. Same lilt, same diction, same everything. I was like, I almost wanted to say, is this Fogsbane? And are you pranking me? A real story. True story. I swear, it was like, this is Fogsbane. I know it. It was just
Fogsbane.
He's everywhere.
I have spoken to Fogsbane many times on the phone, and they're great conversations. And I know his cadence and his voice. And I swear, this guy was like a clone of Fogs. I was like, this is Fogsbane, right? Something crazy. I do not work in tech support. Or no, he says he does work in tech support, but not there.
Yeah.
Well, thank goodness, Fogs. But there's a clone of you. No, the
New
whole
York.
It was everything, Fogs.
Yeah.
There were delays. It was just everything Fogsbane about that. And I was like, I swear I'm talking to Fogsbane. and we were talking deep tech networking plus geek speak. And, you know, the guy was like, yeah, right there with me. And I was like, this is Fogsbane. I know it.
Well, Fogsbane, I'm going to ask you, by the way, do you or do any of you, for that matter, gentlemen, watch this show? It's out of England. I think it's called The IT Team or something. It's hilarious. It's hilarious.
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
It seems like it's like a 90s or maybe an early 2000s show, but very British, very, very funny. Good characters. They even have the goth guy who lives in the closet, sort of.
Okay, so it started in 2006 and ended in 2013. I will check it out.
Yeah, I think you'd like that.
A ragtag team of IT support workers at a large corporation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It's British. It's funny. It's good stuff. And Fogs, if you haven't seen it, you got to check it out.
And it's on
you
Netflix,
got a Roku.
Apparently.
It's on Pluto. Hey. There you go.
Oh, okay. There too.
Free
okay.
plug of the night. Pluto sent us the check.
Oddly, during the week, I sent you guys a few nods to some television series that came out this week that are interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something called the Umbrella Academy. It's a comic book iteration television series. And COVID broke it up, but there are three seasons out there to go check out. And I just watched the season three, and it did not disappoint.
All right. Well, while we're doing that kind of news, I had the opportunity to see all 7 episodes of season 4 of Stranger Things that were released so far. They got 2 more episodes coming out this Friday, which I will not get to listen to until probably Sunday.
Yeah, I have them all, and I haven't watched them.
You got to watch them. It's geared more towards your age than mine. We're a few years past
that.
But it's very 80s.
Years? I know you guys are so much older, 5 years older than me.
Yeah, well, it means nothing now, but it was a big difference back then, 5 years.
It was, because you were the second
grader. 11th graders, that's for sure.
That's right. You said, hey, you little kid, get out of here. We're busy. Yeah, that's right. Boy.
You know, some weird life. Yeah, we got shows about pearls tonight. Dave, I don't know how you do it, but you themed up.
I don't know.
On a weekend on pearls.
I don't know.
Oh, there's a lot on pearls. There's always kind of pearls and, you know, we have diamond necklaces down the road because a lot of missing, stolen diamond necklace stories, that kind of a thing as well. But we got pearls this week, and they get back to some more of our normally unique things next week.
Yep.
It was like
next week. We're going sci-fi next week. But tonight it's Dragnet.
Yeah, sci-fi.
Suspense and Sam Spade.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And this is Sam Spade. It's a little different than last week's. This has Sam Dunn. They lost their Wild Root Cream Oil sponsor, and Dashiell Hammett was being blacklisted at the time, and that touched over to Howard Duff a little bit, so he lost his gig, and NBC brought it back almost sustaining with Sam Dunn. Nothing wrong with him, but you give him the same lines, and it just doesn't work as it did with Howard Duff.
Right.
It's the same show, but it's a different show. It's like when Tom Conway stepped in for Vincent Price on The Saint. Give them the same lines, they just don't come out the same. It doesn't happen. Now, if you set that aside and can set aside Howard Duff, it's not a bad little story, but it ain't Sam Spade to me in some ways.
We always love our favorites. And we might as well get started with the...
Okay.
Where will we begin, Gar? Where do you want to start with tonight?
Yeah... Well, like I said, it was like Dave was part oyster this week. Let's see. Let's go with suspense because I really liked the. I liked it.
Okay, this one's called "The End of the String."
Yep.
Originally broadcast. Oh, I don't know. Say.
I'm in the wrong room. Hang on. Oh my.
it was a while ago.
Here we go.
It was,
January 17th, 1956.
Episode number 633.
I gave you all the bridge I could.
I ran.
You did well. We love you.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you the story of a fantastic theft of $1 million pearl necklace. We call it The End of the String. So now, starring Stacey Harris, here is tonight's suspense play, The End of the String. The necklace consisted of 61 perfectly matched pearls. It was insured for $650,000 and was probably worth about $1 million.
I got to know about the deal because Sam liked me, I guess, because in Boston, I wasn't competition. Just a nice young fellow who was trying to get ahead in costume jewelry. That's why I happened to be in his private office when the parcel containing the pearls arrived.
I told you, young fella, you were going to see something this morning.
Yeah, that's what you said, Sam.
Yeah, I like you. You call me Sam. Since I've been a big high finance, you know, I got to be Mr. Hyler. You're not impressed. I like that. I should have had a son like you to pass the business.
Go ahead. Pass it anyway. I'm up for adoption.
Hey, smart. Come over here. To the window. You ever see $1 million?
Like in the necklace you told me about? Would it? In the package?
Yeah, the same.
How come you have it delivered by mail, Sam? Isn't that risky?
Uh-uh. Sam Hyler's no dope. You get a messenger to carry it from Detroit to Boston, what happens? Somebody gives them a crack in the head. Registered mail, this they don't touch.
Yeah, I'm glad to know about that. I'm just liable to send myself $1 million.
Don't worry. Someday maybe you will. Hand me the scissors there, will you, on the desk.
Sure. Here you are.
Thank you.
Hey, fancy sealing wax, stamp. I'm very impressed.
Sam Hyler, S.H., impresses the customers, and I don't get anybody fooling with the parcel. That's something you got to learn, Mark. In this business, you got to pick and choose your agents, you know, in the other cities. Mine, I know like sons, all bonded.
What was the necklace doing in Detroit?
Customer. Couldn't make up his mind. So I had my boy there send it back to me.
Hmm.
You see, tomorrow, the next day, the customer will be screaming for it.
I'm better off in costume jewelry. There's too much strain with that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Switch on the light, will you?
Okay.
Now, young man, what do you think of this? You are going to see something.
Come on, Sam. Sam! He keeled over. For a minute, I thought he was finished, but he'd only passed out from shock, and I knew why. Inside the box, wrapped in cotton and enclosed in part of a newspaper, were 8 cubes of sugar. $1 million worth of nothing. Half an hour, the office was alive with uniforms. Poor old Sam just sat on the couch, a wet towel on his head, staring over at the box on his desk. I felt really sorry for the old guy. I figured it was about time for me to go, but that's when Sam woke up a bit, and so did a Dartmouth-type cop from headquarters.
Mark, you going?
Well, unless there's something I can do, Sam.
I'll say, before you go...
Yeah?
What did you say your name was, sir?
Hendricks. Mark Hendricks.
Do you know anything about this?
No, not much. I was here when Mr. Hyler opened the box, and that's about it.
Uh-huh. You in this business, too?
Costume jewelry. I have the office downstairs in the front.
Oh. You were in here when the mail came?
No. No, I came up a couple of minutes later.
Didn't see anybody around in the hall?
No, I didn't.
Well, Mr. Hyler, you say that the same postman's been on the route for 5 years?
Every day.
Yeah.
Mark, you go ahead. Thanks for staying.
And I'll look,
Miss, will
Sam,
you come
if
in,
there's
please?
Anything at all I can do, huh?
Well, maybe you could wait a little, you know.
Sure, Sam, I'll stick around.
How do you feel now, Mr. Hyler?
I'm all right. I'm fine. I wish I was dead.
Okay, I want to get a couple of things straight. You took the mail, miss?
Miss Cummings. Yes, same as usual.
The mailman come into the office? Nobody with him?
That's right.
Nobody else in here?
Only Mr. Hyler. Mr. Hendricks arrived a few minutes later.
You'd already given the package to Mr. Hyler?
Yes.
Okay. I want the name and the address of the sender, and then when the postal inspector gets here, we'll go on from there.
The cop's name was Collie. The postal inspector, Shearer. Between the two of them, they covered everything. I hung around because Sam wanted me there, and though nobody said anything, I had the feeling that until they got through, I was going to be around because they wanted it. About 12 o'clock, the mailman was brought in. He was really shaky. The kind of guy that looks guilty just for living.
I tell you, I don't know. I'm sorry. Listen, nothing like this has ever happened. Mr. Hyler, you tell him.
I told him already.
Mr. Hendricks.
Oh, sure, I'll give you a clean bill.
You see? Look,
sir, nobody said you switched packages. All we want to know is where you stopped between the office and here.
I made all my stops.
Okay. We'll start in this building. Did you put the mail bag down anywhere?
No.
How many offices?
Four. No, three. No, four. Five, but next door is empty.
All right, it's four. Where'd you stop first?
Mr. Hendricks, he's in the front.
Yes. You put your mail bag down?
Well, maybe just for a minute. We talked about the game last weekend, but nobody was around. Nobody touched the mail bag.
That went on for another half hour. They tried to catch him up on the point of leaving his mail bag unattended, but he swore up and down he hadn't taken his eyes off it. At 3 o'clock, they quit. I went back to my place and caught up on my own mail. A couple of bills, a free dog food coupon. I saw Sam a lot in the next couple of weeks. He took to dropping into the office before going home and taking me out for a drink.
No. You're my guest. I pay for the drinks.
Oh, now, look, Sam, it's embarrassing. You never let me
Please.
Pick up a chair.
In the hour of need, you were there. I can trust you. Oh, these are bad days for me, Mark. I need a friend.
Sure, Sam. I know.
The insurance company called today.
Huh?
Yeah, they're offering a reward. $50,000 for information. I added 10 of my own.
$60,000.
Mm-hmm.
Still nothing on it, though, huh?
Nothing. The post office traced the package from the time it left Detroit. Nobody touched it.
What about while the necklace was in Detroit?
Well, like I told the police, I trust my boy there. He put my seal on it. He mailed it. We checked. I trust him, but we checked, too.
Sam, what about that seal? I mean, you sure the one on the fake package was yours?
It's my seal, the same. The police examined it. I don't know. Somebody got a hold of it, I guess. But yet they couldn't. There's only me and the Detroit firm that's got one, and they're kept in the safe. My boy, you know, I'm going to retire.
Come on, Sam. Insurance will cover the loss. You're not too badly off.
It'll take years. I know that company. Mark, years.
It's a funny thing about money. You don't have a lot, so you wish you had more. Then when you've got more, you want more than that, so you won't go back to not having any. Trouble is, where do you stop? The next day, I caught Sam's secretary as she was leaving the office. Oh, Jeannie.
Hi.
Hi.
Where have you been?
Oh, around. You in a rush?
No. Want to take me to dinner?
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a date, but I'll break it.
Great. You know, you must be one of the compensations for being broke.
Can I use your phone?
Sure. Come on in the office.
He's a Harvard boy. I've taken terrible advantage of him.
I'll just bet you have. Well, you tell him you've got homework tonight, huh?
I will. Well, that's enough homework for a while.
Oh?
You know, I think you've got something on your mind. I mean, you haven't been concentrating at all.
I'm sorry, honey.
Huh.
I want to ask you something.
Yes?
This isn't a proposal. You want to make $100,000?
Well, you have got something on your mind.
If you say no, it's okay. But if you say yes, you can't back out.
I love to say yes.
Oh, come on, Jeannie. I'm serious.
So am I.
It's about Sam Hyler's necklace.
Oh?
Who do you like more? Your boss or $100,000?
I'm loyal. You know that.
Yeah, I know. To which one?
Money. Sam, too, depending.
Okay, I'll take a chance.
I want to show you something.
Deal still on?
Mark, it's the necklace.
Yeah. Beautiful, isn't it?
You are listening to The End of the String. Tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Chances are the average man in jail would be pleased and reassured to learn that his wife was safe at home, but not the gentleman in the pokey in this week's episode of 21st Precinct. Having jammed the lock on the door to his home prior to his arrest, he is startled and not a little dismayed to realize that his long-suffering wife cannot get out of the house to bail him out, even when she wants to. For engrossing drama with an extra good measure of human interest and humor, don't miss this diverting story on 21st Precinct, when it is broadcast this Friday night over most of these same stations.
Oh, you gotta love that premise. You know, when I'm in prison...
Yeah. Back when I was in prison, I couldn't believe she didn't bail me out. Oh, boy. Oh, man.
Goodness.
Yeah,
she
you
wanted
know,
to bail
him
out, but
yeah.
She just couldn't find a shovel.
You know, we over time, in old-time radio, we hear a lot of these stories, premises where... money is just ruining people, and I hope that I don't know. I know that that would never be the root of a destruction for me, as far as a relationship or something. It'd be for money. I don't know.
I'd like to say I feel the same, but at the same time, I wouldn't mind trying having a bunch of money.
Well, but. If it was someone else's, if it was a friend of yours,
oh no,
they
no, no,
had
no,
money,
no. I would
could...
I would want to get it by fair means, not yeah. foul.
Exactly,
oh, yeah.
exactly.
It's like the old saying goes, all I want is a chance to prove that money won't change me, you know?
Yeah, you got this. Well said.
Yeah.
I like that.
There's something in this about well, no, they said it, the narrator might have said it, or the person, the character said something about something along those lines about money, having it and wanting more, or something along those lines, and that just, I don't know.
I was going to say, here's my little nugget of wisdom on the topic. Money can't buy happiness. It's a hell of a down payment.
Yeah. I am glad and fortunate I am not of want, but yeah, the excess, I actually move away from opportunities like that. I'm like, a lot of people say, oh, there's money to be made. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. No, I'm okay. Leave me alone.
Yeah, there's certain ways I'd rather not.
Yeah.
I mean, like horror hosting, for example. Okay, horror hosting. You can have a. There are ways to do stuff, and you get sponsors, and they pay for this, and they pay for that. You know, and you can get a salary, and you can make some money. I mean, look at Elvira. I'm pretty sure Elvira is probably, if everything worked out, probably financially stable.
Who knows? I don't check her books.
Hello. All right.
I tried once.
I'll give it to you.
She didn't appreciate it.
Yeah, dirty dog.
I said books.
But like, I'm
books.
Yes. I heard you. But what I'm saying is, yeah, one letter, right?
Financial.
But, yeah. But
You know, there an opportunity to get into the horror hosting thing and make a comfortable living at it.
Yeah.
In one way, shape, or another.
That'd be fun.
You know, and, well, you know, I guess it's out there. Yeah. I'm not going to modify my life to go, like, I've never been to a monster.
And here's another thing. When you start getting into real money, I mean, even if it's just enough to live on, the guy who's paying you has real money, right?
Right, right.
Then they start, like, getting into your content. You can do this. You can't do that. You said
that
exactly,
the wrong way. Exactly.
You're naughty.
Right.
You're on the naughty list.
Right. Yes.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Which stifles creativity.
It can. It can. And for the longest time, that was why I'm currently in production hex, because I'm having to create content from old episodes that I have. And we can edit them and make them kind of funny and entertaining, but I would much rather be doing it live. That's how it was created.
That works for you, and you're one of the few that can do it, Gar.
Right. But there's money to be made.
And there's
it's usually the people you're working for, right?
I don't know, but we just lost him.
Oh, did we? Yeah, we did.
Maybe he didn't pay his cable bill. I don't know. Let's get back to Sorry, Gar, that wasn't nice. The end of the string, suspense.
And now we bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Stacey Harris, starring in tonight's production, The End of the String, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. She sat looking at the necklace and her mouth opened and shut like a beautiful blonde fish. Then she noticed me staring at her and she got a hold of herself, reached for a cigarette and lit it.
Funny. Mr. Hyler's the only one I've ever seen hold that necklace.
Huh? It's not heavy. Here. Are you interested?
What are you going to do?
What I've been trying to do ever since I got a hold of it. Peddle it.
Oh?
Trouble is, I don't know where to start. And that's where you come in.
Here, take it back. No.
What do you mean, no?
I couldn't help you. I mean, I don't know any more about where to get rid of it. Well, than you.
But if you did know.
I couldn't. Wouldn't make any difference. I just couldn't.
It's worth a million. I figure we could get 200,000, maybe more. Split down the middle, that's $100,000, Jean. Tax-free.
But you'll be caught. So will I.
Nah. Worst of it's over.
How'd you do it, Mark?
Well, it seems to me I've told you an awful lot already. If we can't make a deal, let's forget it, huh?
Aren't you afraid I'll tell Mr. Hyler?
No. No, because if you did, you'd have to prove what I've told you. That wouldn't be easy. They wouldn't find the necklace around here, and besides, you wouldn't get $100,000.
Why'd you pick me?
Well, Sam works with people in the business. You get his phone calls, answer his mail. Wouldn't be hard to find out who handles this kind of stuff. You could even ask him if you're careful.
That's all I'd have to do? Find out where to sell the necklace?
Not another thing.
All right.
Good. Now, so I won't keep you up tonight. I'll tell you how I worked it. This wasn't done overnight. Sam has been telling me for a long time about that necklace.
But how'd you know he was sending it to Detroit? And when it had come back?
Empty office next to yours. Did you ever hear of wall mics, induction coils to pick up phone conversations?
Oh.
That's it. Now, let me turn that thing on.
But you couldn't have got a hold of his seal. All the packages have a seal on.
I didn't have to. I got friendly with the mailman. He always stops to gab when he brings my mail. About a month ago, I saw a package addressed to Sam.
That wasn't the necklace.
No, but it was an important package. Had Sam's seal on it. So So I got the mailman interested in some costume pieces for his wife, and when he was looking at them, I took a wax impression of the seal. Had a stamp made from that.
Just like that?
Just like that. Heard Sam talking to his agent on the phone 2 days before the necklace was mailed from Detroit. I knew when it was going to arrive, so I made up my own package with the seal, switched them when the mailman stopped by.
Well, how'd you know what the box looked like?
I was in the office when you were wrapping it to mail out to Detroit, remember?
And I thought you hung around because of me.
Well, sure. Sure, you're prettier than Sam. We agreed not to make any contact with each other until she had some word for me. I'd worked it out pretty well. I hoped that she wouldn't be suspected if she did ask questions about fences in Boston or New York, and I hoped she wouldn't lose her nerve. For the next 5 days, I sweated it out alone. The necklace was safe. I didn't have to worry about that. But you're never really happy when $1 million is lying around and you got to borrow $100 to pay rent. Then one evening, just as I was getting home. Hello.
Hello, Mark.
Oh, hi. Where are you?
Downstairs.
Oh, well, come on up.
I wanted to see if it was all right. There's somebody with me.
Oh?
I thought I'd do a little work to earn the money. I found a man, called him myself.
Does he know what it is?
Not yet.
Are you sure he's all right?
I think so. Yes.
Okay, come on up.
Mark, this is Mr. Larkin. Mark Hendricks.
How are you?
Mr. Hendricks.
Well, can I fix your drink?
Never drink, thanks.
Oh, well, sit down. Jeannie, you want to get me a scotch and water?
Yeah, all right.
Thanks. Well, Jean tells me you're interested in jewelry.
I represent an outfit that buys and sells.
Mm-hmm. You in the market to buy right now?
Might be. Depends what's being sold.
Oh, sure.
From folks we don't know, we usually take stuff on consignment.
No, that's out. This is a cash proposition only.
Uh-huh.
You have much call for pearls?
Not much. Of course, for special customers, once in a while we buy them.
Mm-hmm. How about a pearl necklace?
Might be interested. You got it?
Not on me. I can get it, though.
How much you want?
$200,000.
For pearl?
It's worth $1 million.
You're crazy.
Well, it's insured for over $600,000.
The Highland necklace? You got that?
I might.
You're a pretty foolish boy.
What do you mean?
You're working backwards. You should figure how to get rid of it before you lift it. Nobody's going to touch that necklace.
Well, now, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
You didn't tell me what your boyfriend had, honey. You're wasting my time.
Well, just take a look at it, huh? Maybe you'll change your mind.
What do I want to look at it for? I wouldn't give you $1,000 for it. Nothing. You better get rid of that thing any way you can. I'm telling you. Nice to have met you, folks. And I'd like to ask you to please forget my name.
He was gone, just like that. Jeannie stood there holding a couple of glasses looking at the door. There wasn't anything to say, so we didn't try. After a couple of drinks, though, we felt better. Saw one guy who was afraid to handle a big item. There were others. We'd go after them. Jeannie and I got to know most of the fences in the East during the next month. We'd only have to say pearls and the door would slam. Word gets around. I was getting a little scared, so I decided on another plan. We had to be even more careful about getting together, so Jeannie met me on her lunch hour in the public library. We went to the reference room and walked down to a back aisle.
Listen, Mark, let's forget it, huh?
What do you mean?
We can't sell it. We've tried. Let's forget it.
What are you going to do with it? Just drop it in the bay?
I don't care. Just so we get rid of it.
Now, look, we've gone this far. We can't just... Shh, be quiet.
Excuse me.
Yes, certainly.
Thank you.
Now, you look. We've gone this far. We can't just get rid of it.
Then what do we do?
The reward.
What?
What happens if we find it? We get the reward, don't we? That's $30,000 apiece.
No, I won't do
now
it.
Now, you listen to me. I'm not going back to those $1.98 earrings. I don't care about you. You do what you want. But I know we can get $30,000 each out of this. That's a lot better than nothing.
Is it better than prison?
We won't get caught, Jeannie. I promise you. I've got it all figured out.
Like you had it figured out to sell.
All right, I was wrong. I admit it. This time I'm right.
I'm afraid.
No, look, it's simple. There's nothing to it. They'll never know.
Are you sure?
Let me give you the idea, then you decide. Okay?
Okay.
I guess a deal like this is something like poker. It's hoping you'll pull an inside straight flush, which doesn't happen very often, and the stakes are a lot higher. I made it sound real easy to Jeannie, though. I was to go to Hyler, tell him I'd been doing a bit of private eyeing on my own and that I'd had a tip. Some punk had seen a guy put a small package in one of the lockers at the South Station. That was what I was supposed to know. I'd paid said punk $50 for the information. We set it up like that. Jeannie took the necklace and a package to the station on her lunch hour. I thought it best not to see her after that, and I waited until the next morning before I went to Sam and told him the news. The college boy-type cop, Collie, was at the office 10 minutes later.
Who was this fellow, Hendricks?
Well, I told you, I don't know. I was snooping around. I made a couple of contacts.
Yeah, and the pearls are at the South Station?
Well, if they're not, I spent $50 for nothing.
Mr. Collie, why do you waste time? Mark is doing me a big favor, and you're asking questions. Let's get over there. And don't you worry, my boy. If I get my necklace back, you'll have your $50, and everything else is coming to you.
Let's go.
Which locker is it, Mark, huh?
36, that's what the guy told me.
We'll find out.
Look, Collie, I don't like the way you talk. I'm just trying to help. If you didn't get the reward first, that's not my fault, you know.
Uh-huh. 36?
36.
I'll get the attendant over. He'll have a key.
No. No, wait a minute. Look. It ain't locked.
Well, Hendricks?
Mark, think. Maybe you forgot the number, huh?
No. No, I didn't forget. That's what he said, 36.
Yeah, but there's nothing in it. It's empty.
Well, Hendricks?
Well, I guess I'm out $50.
Yeah. Too bad.
What had she done with it? I couldn't get to the office. I couldn't be seen with her, but I had to know. What had she done with it? I waited all day until she finished work. Then I was waiting outside her apartment when she got home. Jean, now listen, I want to know...
When do we get inside?
Okay, where is it?
Here, take it.
Why didn't you do what I told you to do? Why didn't you put it in the locker?
I did.
Why didn't you put it in the locker?
I can't put it in. Yesterday. Then this morning I heard Mr. Hyler talking to Collie. About you and me seeing so much of each other. I was afraid they were beginning to suspect, so I went back to the station and took it out again. I was trying to do you a favor. And you slapped me.
I'm sorry, Jeannie.
I'll bet you are. Go away. I don't want to see you again. And I don't want to see that necklace again. But you'd better get rid of it. Go throw it in the bay. And you go with it.
Get rid of it. Lose it. $1 million burning a hole in your pocket and you throw it away? No.
No, don't throw it away. It's too beautiful.
Put it back where you got it. Give it back to Sam. Go back to Sam Hyler's office, and in the morning, old Sam will be so happy to find it on his desk, he won't ask any questions. And maybe Collie won't.
So beautiful. $1 million. And so beautiful.
That's a good boy, Mark.
Collie.
You know, I was getting awfully tired of following you around.
Well, it was a great idea anyway. Starting with $1 million, sure, you have to take a loss, so you settle for $200,000. But nobody buys, so then there's the reward, $60,000. It turns out nobody's going to get that. That takes care of the reward. Anybody got a dime for a lawyer?
In which Stacey Harris starred in tonight's presentation of The End of the String. Next week, we bring you a story of a mother, a father, a locked door, and a baby. We call it The Cellar Door. That's next week on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Anthony Ellis. Tonight's script was written by David Williams. The music was composed by Lucian Morawek and Renee Garrigan and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Featured in the cast were Benny Rubin, Mary Jane Croft, Larry Thor, Jim Nusser, and Jack Crucian.
There may be two sides to most stories, but where a story of crime is concerned, there's only one place to be, and that is on the right side of the law. Unfortunately for him, the nice-looking boy finds himself on the wrong side of the law when the FBI in Peace and War next goes into action to track down an impulsive killer. How they link the handsome youth to the ugly crime is a story in itself, a story you want to hear tomorrow night over most of these same CBS radio stations on the FBI in Peace and War. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS News to be followed on most of these same stations by The Jack Carson Show.
That news is probably a little stale.
You hear America's favorite shows on the CBS Radio Network.
Shit, you do.
You tell us.
Dun, dun, dun. It's a crime or a deal, you said it. Lots of crime. You today, we've got some detective. It's radio noir, and it's all about pearls tonight, right here on Erie House Radio. House Radio proudly presents for the very first time Gar's Pearl of Wisdom.
Like an ex-wife, sometimes you don't know what something's worth until it's gone.
Bye-bye.
Hey, before we leave this topic here, just want to know about this actor, Stacey Harris, who starred in this big, his big radio series was This Is Your FBI, and he also was in Ted Blades and Strange Romance, Evelyn Winters, and also in the cast of Confession, Dragnet, Young Pepper's Family, Destiny's Trails, and Frontier Gentlemen. And for you, Gar, believe it or not, in The Adventures of Superman, He played Batman.
Oh, cool. Okay, cool.
Yeah, we played that here that
I
night.
Remember
those.
Hey,
Dave?
No, we played the Arnold Moss pilot episode of a kid's show. But when Superman needed a vacation and Perry White wouldn't give it to him, they brought in Batman to take his place. Ooh. And when they brought in Batman.
And Alfred.
Yep. And
we
Alfred.
Ought to dig that one up if possible. Is that when we get
Alfred and Robin and Batman. In fact, the way they introduced it was Superman meeting Robin. Robin was knocked out in a canoe or something.
A canoe.
He was. He was. He was in a boat, knocked out. And he said,
this youth looks like Robin.
And it was like, oh, hi, Superman. How you doing?
Tweet, tweet.
Holy
tweet,
whirlpool,
tweet.
Batman or Superman or...
Right.
Yeah,
holy congested plots, Batman.
He sounded just like that, too. Very good story there. We got a couple more tonight. Going down the radio noir path.
Holy barbecue, Batman!
Well, since Dave brought up Sam Spade a little
Memphis?
Bit earlier, let's dive into
what
the
is,
street.
What is it, but was the barbecue Memphis or St. Louis, Robin?
Yes.
New York City.
Yes.
Holy New York City, Batman.
So we're going on to Sam Spade. Okay.
Yeah, might as well. Since you brought that up earlier, let's. Get me off this crazy thing.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
see
think
that
we find
I
it.
With. Yeah. So.
As I recall listening to this, its sponsor was basically no one. It was a sustaining program after Wild Root Cream Oil left. And two of its characters that were played it, both the writer and the creator. He wasn't really the writer of the episodes. And, of course, Howard Duff kind of lightly got caught up in the blacklisting as well. So.
I'm not a Wild Root Cream man anyway. I favor pomade. But I tell
you. You're in a holy Alberto VO5, Batman.
Pomade. Oh, so
hey, just a little
folks.
Dab will
like
do you.
Yeah, a little.
A little dab will do you.
Pomade. Very oldie tiny.
A little dab will do you, Batman.
Let's move on to the String of Death Caper from Sam Spade, originally broadcast way back in.
Yeah. February 2nd, 1951, Batman.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Sam Spade Detective Agency?
Me, sweetheart.
Sam, do you know you're on all the papers?
Don't think I'm happy about it.
You were standing on the sidewalk pointing,
mm-hmm.
and there's a dotted line running from U to X where they found the body.
You mean where they found the last body, F? There were several before it.
I know. All those poor, poor people.
Tell me, Effie, how many dots were there running from me to where they found the body?
Oh, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 6, 12, Sam.
That's what I expected.
What does it stand for?
For 1, 2, 3, 6, 12. Deaths, Seth.
Oh, no, not really.
But definitely. We just got in on the big finish. This is a tale of deceit and intrigue, F, strung through many islands and several countries. Yea, through a great many lives. So I am left with no choice but to call it the String of Death Caper.
For NBC, William Spear, radio's outstanding producer, director of mystery and crime drama, brings you the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Effie!
Sam!
Don't shout!
How are you, Sam?
Oh, I'm all right, I guess.
Oh, let me look at you.
Yeah.
Sam, you need a rest. You've been staying up too many nights.
And going around with the wrong people. You don't have to tell me. I have only this to say. If the people I've been going around with lately won't be going around anymore, so don't worry about me.
All right, Sam, if you say so. But you look so terrible. Your eyes are bloodshot.
Aren't everybody's?
And your hands are shaking.
True, Effie, and here's why. Take it down. You ready?
Well, don't make it too gory, Sam.
Effie, I am not going to pull any punches. You'll have to take it as it came, the way I did. Date, fill it in. To Lieutenant I.C. Kelsey, Homicide Detail, San Francisco Police, from Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the String of Death Caper. Dear Kelsey, it's hard to believe that the events of the past 48 hours all began with the discovery of the oyster, but they did, and they made a marked change in the census figures of several countries. The whole thing was incredible. The most incredible part of it was that I was careless enough to let myself get mixed up in it. The entire Simi saga began 2 days ago when my door opened and a woman walked in. Showgirl, type 7B, tight black skirt, too tight blouse, red alligator shoes, hair overdone in somebody's peroxide oven, you know, that kind of stuff. She chewed gum, of course, and swung a black patent leather handbag. And her charm bracelet was so loaded, I wondered if she could lift her arm.
Let's face it, I'm stranded.
Really? Where?
Where'd you think? Here, right in this town.
Well, my sympathies. Won't you sit down?
Thanks. You're a gentleman.
Well, even so.
The next time I take a job somewhere, I'm going to carry a ticket back to where I came from and a 6-day supply of K-rations.
Well, would you care to tell me about it?
I was doing an act at the Gay Paree when the blow fell.
Yes?
They had a big floor show trying to boost business. But it didn't boost. It busted.
Oh.
The place was padlocked. Likewise, the owner's pocketbook. We were out 2 weeks' salary.
We?
I was the Alga, half of the dance team of Ricardo and Alga.
And then?
Ricardo, the creep, must have been tipped off, because the night we closed, at the end of his first number, he danced off the floor, out through the stage entrance, and was never heard from again.
Well, I always say we're better off without those kind of people around anyway.
Not when he buffaloes out with all your savings.
I hate him already.
Well, I sent a wire to my booking agent for help, and his answer came back something like this.
Hmm?
Here, they're starving in the streets. At least you got a hotel room to do it in.
Pardon?
What a laugh.
Oh, those agents are a shifty lot. They only like you when you're working.
Ah, you're telling me. My rent's up at the end of the week, and after that, who knows?
Well, now, madam, your story has touched me very deeply. Would it spoil your timing any if I asked you why you came to see me?
Say, you know, you got a style there. It's unique.
It's widely copied.
Now, don't flash too much of that repartee and make me forget what I came here for.
Just unburden yourself, Olga. No more repartee.
The name's Kelly. Kelly Green.
Oh.
I wouldn't be seen on the street as Olga.
Pardon my mistake?
Yeah. I came to ask you to find a guy named Captain Eric Nostrin. He's somewheres in San Francisco.
An army man?
Him? He bought that title in a saloon in Tahiti. He's a beachcomber. Tell him Kelly's got some information she wants to sell.
Mm-hmm.
You can reach me at the Embassy Hotel, 627. See you later, Sam.
Just a minute, Kelly.
Yeah?
I hate to mention this to someone in your position, but there's a fee for my services.
Oh, he'll pay you. The kind of information I got he wants real bad. Well, ta-ta.
Ta-ta. Clearing everything off my desk, two shoes with feet in them, mine, I embarked on this dangerous assignment, if Brian Donlevy will pardon the expression. You know, I am not without sources of waterfront information, and in a couple of hours I found myself in a bistro called the Backwash, a place that hangs so precariously on the west bank of the bay that flies come to study it.
Ah, hello, Sammy. How are you?
Hello, Eddie. What's a good word?
Well, Sammy, I know what I hear, but what I hear sometimes ain't the truth. Or am I too quick for you?
Give me a for instance.
Well, the guy you called about is sitting down at the far end of this very same bar. At least he calls himself Captain Eric Nostrin. This is what I hear from my side of the bar. But whether he is or not what he says he is only something that can be verified by investigation. Or am I too quick for you?
I'd have another pint of beer, bartender.
Let me buy it.
Sir, you can buy me drinks all night. But don't make the mistake of trying to get me drunk.
Make it two, will you, Eddie?
Right, Sam.
Sam, that means he knows you. You're okay by the house. Well, then you're okay by Captain Nostrand.
There you are, two beers.
What's the rest of it, Sam?
Spade.
Well, I'll tell you something about you, Sam Spade. You didn't come here to drink with me. You came to talk. Now, shall we go over in a booth?
That's a good idea.
Right. Yeah. Now I'm ready to listen.
Do you know Kelly Green?
Kelly? The dancer?
Yeah.
Why, every blasted sailor in the Orient knows Kelly. Let me see now. The last time I remember her, she was dancing on a table in Singapore for some Dutch officer.
Well, she's in town right now. She said she has some information you'd want to buy.
I'll bet she has. You a friend of hers?
Since this morning.
Oh, that's long enough for me. Now, what are you? Private detective?
I am, and that brings up one other point. She said you would pay me for finding her.
Oh, surely. What's your fee?
25 will do.
Year. Year is 50.
No. Look,
take it now. As far as I'm concerned, you've earned it. Now then, what's her address?
Embassy Hotel, room 627.
Well, I'll get in touch with her.
Well, see you around.
Hey, wait a minute, Spade.
Hmm?
How would you like to find someone for me?
Why not? Who are you looking for?
A man named Chan Lee. Now, suppose I tell you the old story now. You take a look at these. Look here. Feast your eyes.
He took a swatch of velvet cloth out of a sea jacket pocket and opened it. On it were six very large, very breathtaking rose-colored pearls. Nostrand's eyes flicked over each pearl as if he knew it by name and lineage. He let me stare at them for several silent minutes before he spoke again.
Did you ever see such timeless beauty captured in six perfect spheres?
Oh, I haven't seen many like those.
Ah, and there aren't many. 12, to be exact. 12 in all the world.
Yeah, what are pearls like that worth?
Well, any jeweler in the city would give you $5,000 a pearl for them. But if I had all 12, I could sell the set for $75,000.
How'd you get half of the 12 pearls, Nostrand?
You ever hear of the Toitoi oyster banks off the Borneo Islands?
No, I haven't been pearling lately.
Ah, well, I have.
Well, is that where these came from?
That's right, from the Toitoi banks. A friend of mine in Jolo named Hong Kong Ari tipped me off that 12 perfectly matched rose-colored pearls could be picked up at Cagayan Sulo from a wholesale buyer called Dong Tse Mao.
Well, which is it?
I shipped over on a catch with two other men. Dong Tse Mao asked 12,000 pesos for the lot, and I took them. Then, when we left Cagayan Sulo, I got caught in a storm and I went overboard. But I didn't fall accidentally, no. I was hit on the head and thrown overboard.
Your buddies wanted the pearls.
Ah, they got six of them in my sea bag. The other six were sewn inside my belt. I still have those. Well, I traced those two guys all over the Orient. But both of them was killed. Ah, the Maro curse, they say. So far, 8 people have died over these pearls.
The Maro curse?
Carny, isn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, the rumor is that the other 6 pearls have found their way to San Francisco and that a man named Chan Lee knows about them.
Hmm?
Oh, I've been here 48 hours and I haven't found him.
What do you plan to do when you find him?
Don't you worry, Spade. I have a buyer. I'll pay cash for him.
All right, I'll give you $50 worth of looking for Chan Lee. Now, where can I get in touch with him?
Are you in the book?
Yeah.
Then I'll find you. Just one thing, Spade. If Kelly likes you, you must be straight. Here. Take a pearl.
Now, wait a minute, Nostrand. You just said each one of these pearls is worth $5,000.
$7,500 to me, but I want to play it this way. Now, if you find Chan Lee, you ask him if he knows me and ask him if he knows about the pearls.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe he won't talk to you, so if he doesn't, just show him the pearl and then walk out. He'll fall all over himself to find me.
Well, you know best. I assume no responsibility for this pearl, though.
Uh-huh. I can handle the responsibility for both of us.
Yeah. Harry Ching, a friend of mine who has his ear to the Oriental ground, put down his mother tongue edition of that great Chinese detective, Shylock Ho, and directed me to a little food store just off Grand Street. There were a number of people in the store looking at merchandise. My man was small and fat and behind the counter.
Good afternoon. May I assist you?
Chan Lee?
Oh, no. My name Li Yuan.
Well, Harry Ching told me Chan Lee would be here.
Oh, before my name Li Yuan, my name Chan Lee. Personal reason for change, you understand?
Not fully, no, but I'm not here to inquire about that.
Oh.
Tell me, do you know a man named Captain Eric Nostrand?
No. Never hear a name, Captain Nostrand.
Look, he's big, red-pointed beard, rough. Register?
Sorry, no.
Ever hear of the rose-colored pearls of Tawatawi?
Oh, you joke. Why you talk pearl with Li Yuan? I deal Chinese food, not jewelry.
Well, I might have the wrong Chan Li, but do you know anything about pearls?
Oh, I can tell good pearl from bad pearl. My uncle wants pearl trader.
Mm-hmm. And take a look at this.
Oh, let me see. Oh.
Well, don't put it in your mouth.
I just bit it to test skin. Oh, yeah. Sure, you joke with me.
Joke about what? I know where five more are just like that, worth $5,000 apiece.
Somebody pull your leg. This pearl, Japanese culture pearl, artificially colored, worth maybe $5.
Really?
Yeah, next time, don't play joke on Chan Li.
Li Yuan.
Oh, yes. That me bold.
A skeptic, I took the pearl to a jeweler I know, and he told me Chan Li lied in his scraggly beard. It was the finest specimen of rose pearl he'd ever seen. Well, I went back to my office to wait for Nostrand's call, when and if it came. I say I went back to my office, but not directly in, because just as I was putting the key in my lock, something familiar pushed in between my shoulder blades.
Mr. Spade, I know all the tricks, so don't try any. Just open the door and go in.
You bet.
Now sit down at your desk and put your hands on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were looking at the tea in Chan Li's store, weren't you?
I was, and I want the pearl you have.
Me?
You.
All right, if you're going to make a scene, suppose you give me something.
I don't have to give you anything. That pearl belongs to me. It was stolen from me, along with all the others.
By Eric Nostrand.
Right. Bought those pearls from Tung Tse Mao in Cagayan Sulu. Nostrand was crew on my catch, and on the way back to Shanghai, he threw me overboard so he could have the pearls himself.
Well, didn't you drown, Mr.?
Ivan T. Sanderson.
Oh.
Some Jap fisherman picked me up.
Go ahead.
This is the first of the 12 rose-colored pearls I've gotten back, and I mean to get the other 11. Even if it takes a few dead bodies to accomplish it.
Well, I admire your spirit, sir, but I'm afraid you've picked out a tough career.
Where's Nostrand?
I don't know.
You must know. You're working for him.
Look, he said he'd contact me. Honest, he...
How did you get tied up with him?
A girl named Kelly Green hired me to find
her. Call her.
All right.
And ask her where Nostrand is.
All right, I will. But don't point there. It's not polite. Yes, well?
Embassy Hotel.
Oh, 627, please.
Whom are you calling, please?
Miss Kelly Green.
Hello?
Kelly?
Yeah?
Sam Spade.
Yeah?
Did Captain Nostrand get in touch with you?
No. Did you find him, Sam?
I did.
Well, he hasn't come up here yet. Not yet, Sam. Thanks for calling. Goodbye.
She hasn't seen him yet.
Thank you, Mr. Spade. I'll be checking with you from time to time.
He pocketed his gun and stalked out with a $5,000 pearl in his hand. I knew he had heard the operator say Embassy Hotel, and I knew he heard Kelly Green's room number. So I let him get a small head start. He went directly to the Embassy Hotel. I followed him into the lobby. He got the one elevator, and I had to wait until it went up and came down before I got it. When I arrived at the sixth floor, the door of 627 was slightly open, and there was a sharp odor in the air. Ivan T. Sanderson wasn't there, neither was Kelly Green. But dragging himself across the floor, trying to reach the door, was Captain Eric Nostrand. He had two bullet holes in his back. I tried to help him, but he was beyond help. He collapsed, dead. As his body relaxed, his mouth slowly opened, and five rose-colored pearls rolled out.
You are listening to the weekly adventure of radio's most famous detective, Sam Spade. Chimes mean good times on NBC. There's music and mystery with the chimes every Saturday. Tomorrow evening for mystery, Herbert Marshall stars as the man called X.
In all the strange and far-off corners of the world, wherever there is intrigue, danger, and romance, there you will find the man called X. For music, there's your hit parade with the top tunes in the land as selected by you and brought to you by Snooky Lanson, Eileen Wilson, and the Hit Paraders. Last week, Tennessee Waltz and My Heart Cries for You were the top tunes across the country. Will they topple? Well, you'll have the answer tomorrow on Your Hit Parade.
With Snooky.
Yeah. Go get them, Hit Parade.
Sam Spade. Part one.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's okay. If it hadn't been for Howard Duff doing the role originally, I'd like it probably. Still intriguing story, but just not quite the same. Steve Dunn also did a lot of other radio, including Dr. Daniel Dangerfield and Danger Dr. Dan Field, and announcer on Jack Kirkwood's show. He also did announcing and television for Liberace and for Bob Crosby. Some of the shows that he appeared in or starred in, like Professional Father, The Millionaire, Alfred Hitchcock, Petticoat Junction, Dragnet 1967, Nanny and the Professor, The Brady Bunch, and to keep our connection going, episodes number 47 and 48 of Batman.
Hey, Gar, did you make it back? I think he's yelling at his cable company.
I think he used his other phone to scream at his cable people.
All right, well, we'll come back with Gar in a little bit. We might as well wrap up Spade. Make sure we
could do that.
Sneak some time in at the end of the show for a little shameless self-promotions and a preview tomorrow
night. Oh, that's
always
fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
Here we go.
Yep.
The conclusion of The String of Death Caper.
And now back to The String of Death Caper, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
After I found Nostrand's body, I called you, Lieutenant Kelsey, and told you as little as I could. After that, I went out to dinner and then home to bed. This hiatus was necessary in order to let the pot of vicious intrigue bubble a little. Well, the next morning, at considerable expense, we added a new character to our play, which was already an extravaganza.
Good morning.
Well, good morning.
I am not sure, monsieur, whether I am going to kill you or let you live.
A very effective entrance, sir. And who are you?
Jacques Malraux.
Aha! Of the Malraux curse.
The same, monsieur. It was reported in the paper that you found the body of Captain Eric Nostrand in the apartment of a girl named Kelly Green.
Well, I'm afraid I just happened to be there.
Did you happen to know if anyone found a number of pearls on Nostrand's body?
Well, as far as I know, they didn't. You mean the Tawatawi pearls, don't you?
Aha! You know about them?
A little, yeah. They belonged to a man named Tung Say Mao, who sold them to a man named Ivan Sanderson, who had them stolen from him by Captain Nostrand, who had half of his stolen from him. That's the installment I just read, anyway.
Perhaps it is mostly right, except for one important point. Tung Say Mao was holding them for me. They were not bought. They were taken from him at the point of a gun.
Getting involved.
I risked my life in the shark-infested waters of Tawi Tawi diving for those pearls. No man but me will possess them. Now, where to find Kelly Green and Ivan Sanderson?
Oh, I don't know. The police don't know, so I can't tell you.
Aha. All right, Monsieur Spade. You have an honest face, I believe you. But if it turns out later that you have deceived me, you will find to your regret that Jacques Malraux is not an easy man to do business with. Au revoir.
Following his exit, I allowed a pause for dramatic effect and then dissolved into the next scene. On the front door of Chanley's grocery store, there was a sign, closed for the day, so I went around the block, through an alley, and came up on his living quarters from the back way. I stood at the back door and knew somebody was home listening to some Oriental Artie Shaw. I tried the doorknob, it turned, and I carefully opened the door and stepped in.
What you do my house?
Well,
what light you come in private house?
Turn that thing off and I'll tell you.
Hola, get out! Get out or I call police!
Son, I didn't come here to quibble with you. I came to speak right from the shoulder.
What you talk about?
The Tawatawi Pearl.
I don't know Pearl. Get out!
You know Nostrin was killed yesterday, don't you?
I tell you before, I know no man named Nostrin.
All right, where's Sanderson?
What man?
The tall man with a clipped mustache who was in your store yesterday when I was there.
No, plenty people come my store. I not know them all by name. Come by anybody. Plenty mustache.
All right, play it your way for
look
now.
Look out.
But if you ever do meet up with Sanderson, just tell him that I have the other five pearls. The ones Nostrin was killed for. Just as I closed the door behind me, I saw a pair of red alligator shoes with a pair of nylons draped over them pushed under a chair. I hesitated a minute, thought better, and hurried away. I went back to my office, pulled out a good book, and read for 3 hours. It paid off.
Sam, I had to come to you. I'm in an awful jam.
I should say you are, and it won't get you any easier when I call the police.
I knew Eric was found in my apartment, but I didn't have anything to do with it.
Nuts. I called you from here not 10 minutes before Nostrin was found dead.
All right, he was there, but he wanted me to say he wasn't.
Do you want me to tell you something else about yourself? I checked with the Embassy Hotel. Your bill was paid for a month in advance. You weren't stranded. It was a murder setup from beginning to end. But I can't understand your being dumb enough to use your real name.
He wasn't supposed to have been killed there. It was supposed to happen someplace else.
That's what I thought.
Oh, don't do it, Sam. I came here to tell you the truth. I need your help.
I can't help you now, Kelly.
He made me do it. He made me come to San Francisco, wait for Nostrin, and then find him.
Who made you? Sanderson?
No. Chan Lee. He killed Nostrin. He shot him. But we heard somebody at the door and went out the fire escape before we could search Nostrin.
What do you mean he made you do it?
Look at this. That arm isn't pretty, is it? There must be 1,000 holes in it.
When'd you start this?
In Singapore. Chan used to be there and he supplied me. I had to follow him here because I didn't have enough money to buy it.
I see. Well, Kelly, I'm sorry. Maybe the state will take that into consideration.
Sam! I want to go into partnership with you.
Partnership? Doing what?
Selling pearls. You have 5 of them. I have 6 of them. Here.
Where'd you get these?
From Chan. I heard you there. After you left, he got excited and had to take something to quiet himself down. I grabbed these and beat it while he was still under. What do you say, Sam? Let's sell them and go someplace.
Well, it might be arranged. Where's Sanderson?
Ivan Sanderson?
Yeah.
He lives on a boat. It's a yawl, a trader anchored at Pier 32. Oh, don't worry about him, Sam. You can take care of him.
I probably can. Did you ever hear of a guy named Jacques Mauro?
Mauro? Jacques Mauro?
Yeah.
Is he in San Francisco?
He was in here yesterday looking for you and Sanderson.
Sam, the deal's off. I don't want to have anything to do with it. Here, keep the pearls.
I picked up the 6 pearls and put them in my office safe with the other 5 I'd taken from Nostrin. Then I went down to the waterfront looking for Sanderson. Chan Lee was still under drugs. It'd be no problem for the police to pick up. Nor would Kelly Green once her drug supply began to give out. The trader was a trim white yawl tied up at Pier 32 with a Jacob ladder running down to its deck. I climbed down and looking around found Sanderson in a cabin sitting behind a table. It wasn't a commonplace thing. You see, he'd just been shot.
You can't do anything for me, Sam. There's nothing to do.
How did it happen, Sanderson?
The Mauro curse.
Jacques Mauro.
Yes. He made a vow that he was going to kill anyone who touched the pearls. Anyone.
Did he get your pearl?
Yes. Ooh. As the rest.
I do, 11 of them.
When Mauro finds out, I wonder how you're going to feel. Dying. 11 times.
That's when I turned the whole thing over to you, Kelsey. I went back to my office, put in a call to your office, and gave you a complete rundown on the case from beginning to end. Who did what and how you might go about finding them. You said you'd be right over to pick up the pearls, but you got there a little late. I had no sooner put down the phone when...
All right. You have a pearl. Give them to Chan, or he will not hesitate to shoot you.
The way you did, Nostrin?
I don't have time for talk. Hurry, get pearls.
Okay. They're in my safe here. And don't think I'm going to give you any arguments or pull anything clever.
It will be too bad if you did.
I don't really know who these pearls do belong to, and I don't care much anymore. You can have the worries instead of me.
I will be glad to worry about such a treasure.
Yeah, here they are.
Stay where you are. Throw them to me.
All right. Catch.
Thank you. Now I will go. I advise you against raising outcry.
I'm glad to get rid of you. Go and have a long and happy life.
Oh? Oh, I have been handpicked by the gods.
He was, but for a different reason. He put the pearls in his pocket, and with a little smile of triumph at how easy it had been, he turned and quickly walked out of the office. He even closed the door politely. But outside, he didn't get far. I ran for the hall, sliding my .38 out of its holster. Chun Li lay still on the floor, and his coat pocket had been turned inside out. Steps were pounding down the stairwell, and I followed. When I hit the sidewalk, he was half a block away and running. I fired at him, and he stopped and fired back. My second one caught him full in the chest, and he fell twisting across the sidewalk. I walked right up to him, but it was all over. Jacques Malraux was dead. And one by one, 12 of the most beautiful rose-colored pearls in the world were dropping out of his hand, rolling down the gutter and plopping into the sewer where they belong. Period. End of string.
Sam.
Hmm?
Did they all go down the sewer?
Every pearl, Effie. Who knows where they might be now?
Maybe at the filtering plant.
Maybe out to sea.
Sam.
Hmm?
Could I get off early tonight?
Effie, put that thought out of your mind. They're not worth it.
Oh, but Sam, all that wealth.
I said forget it. I'll go type that up.
Oh.
Go on, scoot.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC. There's music and fun in the air tomorrow evening, styled to suit your Saturday night of merriment. Dennis Day brings you songs and comedy in his charming boyish manner, and then Judy Canova gets together with her frolicsome friends for Mountain Melody and Mayhem, followed by Grand Ole Opry with singing MC Red Foley and his gang. It's a Saturday night of fun designed for you.
Tied up. Oh, Sam, those pearls.
Hmm?
I'd give anything just to wear them one night.
Anything?
Well, I suppose it isn't worth it. But someday, somehow, I want to wear expensive jewelry.
Effie, I'd rather see you with a sparkling light in your eye any day. Looks much better on you.
And, of course, it's cheaper.
Effie, is that a slur on my character?
Well, I don't get paid too much. Too often.
All right, let's settle this thing right here. You say you want some pearls?
Oh, I'd love some.
Uh-huh. Now, here you are. 6 oysters.
What?
3 boys and 3 girls. You can grow your own at home.
Sam, are those really oysters?
They are, indeed. I picked them up at Fisherman's Wharf just this afternoon.
Well, what do I do?
Well, I'll make it easier for you. I also bought a bottle of cocktail sauce. So which will it be, pearls or oysters on the half shell?
Oh, Sam, you're so different. Let's eat them.
Not until you say...
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade are produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade was played by Stephen Dunn. Loreen Tuttle is Effie. Script for tonight's adventure by John Michael Hayes. Musical scoring by Lud Gluskin, conducted by Robert Armbrister. Join us again next week, same time, for another adventure with Sam Spade. Now the Magnificent Montague, then it's Duffy's Tavern on NBC.
That wraps up Sam Spade.
NBC. NBC.
For the very second time, Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Pearl of Wisdom.
On every string of pearls, it's important to know which is more valuable, the string or the pearls.
Mouthwash.
Yep. There you go. Well, we got to kind of keep things moving a little bit as we've got an entire episode of Jack Webb's Dragnet.
Yeah, we owe thanks to Gar for this tonight. I dug one up, and it wasn't a good copy, and I went through four different sources before I found this one. A really good copy. So we owe this
Gar
one to
the
we
rescue.
Owe this one to Gar.
Gar to the rescue.
I spent a while trying to edit the darn thing. I couldn't touch it.
Jack Webb.
But, and if it hadn't been for that good old that little bit movie party he had and he walked by night, it may never have happened. And NBC didn't really want it. They didn't want another detective show. They had him in a different show, and they didn't really want him. I mean, he was all over the place and all kinds of shows, including Escape. And they didn't really want another detective show. Luckily, they took it, and it became it became a hit radio, television, and then again television.
Yeah. Well, no, there is a movie. It's not Jack Webb, but Tom Hanks and one of the Ghostbuster guys.
Yeah, it was Dan Aykroyd, wasn't it?
Yep.
Dan Aykroyd.
We got to get moving forward, and this.
Okay, let's get moving forward.
Radio version of Dragnet is called The Big String, originally broadcast.
January 17th, 1956, Batman.
Episode 187.
Sound off for Chesterfield. Chesterfield, the only cigarette in America to give you premium quality in both regular and king size, brings you Dragnet. Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned the homicide detail. A man walks into your office and tells you he returned to his home to find that his wife was gone. She left no indication where she was going. Foul play is suspected. Your job, find her. The modern way to sell cigarettes is the Chesterfield way. Premium quality in both regular and king size. And we're the only one that does it.
Premium quality in a cigarette means the world's best tobaccos, the best ingredients, the best cigarette paper. Only Chesterfield gives you this premium quality in both popular sizes.
King size Chesterfield contains tobaccos of better quality and higher price than any other king-size cigarette. That's certainly important to every king-size smoker. Of course, it's the same fine tobacco as in regular Chesterfield. There is absolutely no difference, except that king-size Chesterfield gives you more than a fifth longer smoke.
Yes, the modern way to sell cigarettes is the Chesterfield way. Premium quality, both regular and king-size.
Chesterfield is much milder. Chesterfield is best for you.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, July 7th. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name is Friday. I was on my way into work, and it was 4:58 p.m. when I got to room 42. homicide.
John, are you?
Yeah. Been here long?
No, I just got in. Sure a beautiful day, isn't it?
Yeah, summer's really here, isn't it?
This daylight saving time makes a difference. Got a lot more time, seems like. Made me think about my vacation.
Well, you're doing a couple of weeks, aren't you?
Yeah, first part of August.
Mm-hmm. Figured out where you're going yet?
Yeah, Faye and I talked it out. You know, Joe?
Oh, what's that?
I think maybe I had Armin figured wrong.
Armin? That's your brother-in-law?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This year, Faye and I got to talking where we're going to spend the vacation. Faye wants to go up to Big Bear. I'm saying Mexico.
Yeah?
You know, I figure a little fishing. I hear the yellows are hitting pretty good.
The what?
Yellowtails.
Oh, yeah.
You don't fish much,
no,
do you?
No, I don't Joe? Fish at all. You know.
Well, they're supposed to be hitting pretty good, but Faye can't see Mexico. And darn if old Armin doesn't chime in and say he thinks Mexico's a great idea.
Well, that's swell.
Yeah, tells Faye all about the beaches down there and how good the food is, all about the air, healthy. You know, really sells her.
So that's where you're going, huh?
No, Faye didn't buy it. It's going to the mountains.
Well, fishing's supposed to be pretty good up there, too, isn't it? That's what I've read, I guess.
I suppose so, but... Old Armin, how do you like that guy? He sure surprised me.
Yeah, maybe he's going to work out, huh?
Yeah.
I'll get it.
Okay.
Homicide, Friday. Yes, sir, it is. I beg your pardon. Could you talk a little louder? Yes, sir. Uh-huh. Yes, sir. Well, when was that? I see. When? Yes, sir. What was that address again? All right, I have it. Yes. Yes, sir, that's right. We'll be right out. Right. Bye. Well, we got one to roll on. Kidnapping out in Hollywood. The man on the phone gave his name as Henry Wagner. He said that he'd come home from work and found that his wife was gone. He said on the phone that he'd found a note demanding ransom and cautioning him against calling the police. 5:22 p.m., Frank and I arrived at the house on Temple Hill Avenue. We parked the car down the street from the house and went up to the front door. Frank would remain in the car for a few minutes and then follow. In that way, if the kidnappers were watching the house, they wouldn't be as likely to know that we were working on the case. I rang the bell and waited.
Yes, you're the police?
Yes, sir, that's right. My name's Friday.
Oh, hello. Come in, please, quickly. I don't want them to see you.
Who's them, sir?
The kidnappers. They might be watching. I don't know what I'm going to do. Terrible thing to have happen. Just doesn't make sense.
All right, now, sir, if you just try to calm down and tell me what happened here, will you want to start right from the beginning?
All right. I got home from school about 4:30. Myra wasn't here. I looked at the house for her, figured, like you said on the phone, that she might have gone to the store.
Uh-huh.
When I couldn't find her, I started looking for a note. That's when I found the ransom demand right there on the coffee table.
And you said you got home from school, is that it?
Yes, I teach political science at the university.
Well, when did you last see your wife?
When I left this morning, about 7:30. I have a class at 8.
Have you talked to her since?
Yes, I called her about 1:15.
Did everything seem all right then? I mean, did she seem to be upset, anything like that?
No, everything seemed to be normal.
Did she say if there was anyone with her when you talked to her?
No, if there was, she didn't give any indication of it.
I see.
I know that this isn't a hoax, if that's what you're thinking. I know that Myra wouldn't do a thing like this. She's a serious woman. I guess you might say that she had a rather dull sense of humor. No, I know that she wouldn't do a thing like this as a joke.
Well, no, sir, it's not that. I'm just trying to get all the facts here. I wonder if I could see the note.
Yes, I left it over here on the desk.
That'll be my partner. I'll let him in if it's all right. All right, Frank.
Yeah,
money. Let's see here. Mr. Wagner, this is my partner, Frank Smith.
How do you
do, sir? Wagner.
How do you do? I'll get the note.
Well, I'd rather you wouldn't handle it anymore, sir.
Oh, all right. You're going to try to get some fingerprints from it? Is that right?
Well, that's the idea, yes, sir.
You read it, Joe?
Yeah, it's made up a newsprint. It's been cut out of the paper. Looks like one of the morning papers.
Yeah.
I'll read it to you. It says, put $10,000 in fives, tens, and twenties in the shoebox. Make sure the bills are unmarked. On July 8th, drive up Deer Canyon Drive at 10:30 p.m., 5 miles past the turnoff. You'll see a white string across the road. Drop the shoebox out of the car. Go on back home. Your wife will be returned. Don't tell the cops. If you tell anybody, we'll kill your wife.
Deer Canyon Drive.
Yeah, you know, that's up above Laurel.
Oh, yeah. $10,000. Do you have that kind of money, Mr. Wagner?
No, sir. I don't know how I'm going to raise it. I have to, but I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Have you noticed anyone lately that's been in the neighborhood here? I mean, anybody loitering around without any reason to be here?
No, I haven't. Of course, you must understand I'm not home a great deal. But Myra didn't say anything about it. I'm sure she would have if she'd seen anybody like that.
You and your wife have any enemies that do a thing like this, would you know?
None that I can think of.
You have any household help?
I beg pardon?
Household help. Anyone that comes in to help your wife with the housework. You know, a day maid, something like that.
Well, there's Betty Jo. She comes in once a week to clean up the house.
When was she last here?
Let me see. That was Saturday. That's her usual day. Saturday, I guess it was then.
Didn't you see her last week?
No. You see, I had to go out by Pomona this last weekend. Series of lectures I wanted to catch. I left early Saturday morning, didn't get back until late that night.
Did your wife go with you?
No, she stayed at home. She had a little touch of the virus and figured she'd better stay at home and take care of it. Are you sure this is the right thing to do? Maybe I should have handled this myself.
No, sir, you did the right thing. I wonder if you could give us a description of your wife, Mr. Wagner.
Why? You aren't going to tell anyone else about this, are you?
No, sir. The information will be handled in the usual confidential manner.
Oh. Well, I guess you men know what you're doing.
All right, sir, if you'd just give us a description, if you could.
Well, Myra is about 5'3". I guess she weighs about 130 pounds.
Mm-hmm. How old is she, sir?
42. Just turned 42. Birthday last month, June 14th.
How about the color of her hair?
Sort of an auburn, I guess you'd call it. A little gray up in here, along the sides.
Mm-hmm. Would you know what she was wearing?
No, I wouldn't have the slightest idea. I don't know her clothes well enough to be able to look at what's in her closet and tell you what she had on.
Mm-hmm. How about marks?
I don't think I understand.
I'm sorry. I mean, any visible birthmarks or scars, anything that might make it easier to identify her?
No, I don't think so. Oh, wait a minute. There's a very small scar just under her ear, right here. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, Myra and I went fishing up in the Sierras. Myra got a trout fly caught there. When they took it out, it left just a very small scar. But I don't think you'd be able to see it unless you were really looking for it.
Mm-hmm. Anything else outstanding about her?
No, there isn't.
I wonder if we could have a photo of her. Do you have one?
Of course.
I wonder if you'd give us the address of this Betty Joe.
Surely. I think Myra kept it in the phone book. I'll look for you. Do you think they'll really do it, officer? Kill Myra?
Well, we're going to try to stop them, sir. I don't think so.
Well, how about the money? Should I get it together? Not a lot of time if I have to meet them tomorrow night.
We'll take care of that.
Here's the address.
Thank you, sir.
I don't know what I'll do if they hurt Myra. I just don't know. It's odd, isn't it, Sergeant?
What's that?
Myra and I have been married for 22 years. I guess I always just took her for granted. Haven't been separated at all during that time. Just took her for granted.
Yes, sir.
I guess you have to lose something before you know what it's worth.
5:43 p.m. We asked Mr. Wagner not to touch anything in the house. We told him that after his wife had been returned and our men could move safely about the neighborhood, the house would be gone over for physical evidence. Two men came out from the office and a stakeout was placed on the house. The note was taken downtown and photographed. Dean Bergman lifted several clean prints from it. However, comparison with those taken from Mr. Wagner eliminated them. The maid, Betty Joe, was contacted, but she could tell us nothing. In the meantime, Sergeant Jay Allen of the crime lab prepared a shoebox as directed by the abductors. Dummy packages of money were placed in the box, and the container was wiped clean of all fingerprints. The area where the meet was to take place was staked out. The following morning, Wednesday, July 8th, Henry Wagner went to teach his classes at the university as usual. Late in the afternoon, he returned home, and at 9:45 p.m., he got into his car and left the house. I'd gotten into the back seat of the car earlier, and I kept out of sight. In an undercover unit behind us, Frank, Lieutenant Gorham, and Gil Encinas kept us under observation in the event that we missed contact with the kidnappers. 10:26 p.m., we turned off Benedict Canyon onto Deer Canyon Drive.
I hope I'm doing the right thing. I can't help thinking of what they might do to Myra.
Well, try to take it easy, Mr. Wagner. We know how you feel. Everything that can be done has been taken care of here.
That's what you've been telling me for the past hour. Doesn't make me feel any better about what's happening.
Can you still see that car behind us?
No. I think they dropped back when we turned off Benedict.
Uh-huh. How's it look up ahead?
Can't see much. Dark.
How far off the canyon have we come?
About 4.5 miles.
You got your box right there ready to throw it out?
Yes, sir. Right here on the seat.
All right, now remember, when you toss it out, try to lift it by the strings.
Right, I'll remember. I just hope we're doing the right thing. I'll never forgive myself if anything happens tomorrow. $10,000 just isn't worth it. Wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
There it is. A string across the road.
See anybody around it?
No. It's so dark. I can't see anything but what's in front of the car.
How close are we to the place here?
About 50 or 60 feet.
All right, now take it slow. Don't give any indication that you aren't doing exactly what they told you to. And remember, don't handle that box. Hold it with a string.
All right. We're here. I'm throwing the box out.
All right, now close your door.
What now?
Go up the road a little, and then turn around and drive back. Act like everything is just the way they told you to handle it.
All right.
Take it easy now.
We can turn around here.
All right. You see anyone move for the money?
No, not yet. Maybe when I get turned around. Just a second. There's a driveway here. Pretty dark back there.
Right, can you see anything at all?
Nothing there. I don't see anyone.
All right, now just keep driving. If there's anybody to pick up the money, it'll look better if you don't cause any trouble.
I don't know about all of this, Sergeant. Somehow I still can't get the idea out of my mind that we've done the wrong thing. that they know all about it, that they're going to kill Myra.
Now, there's no reason that they should know that there's anything wrong, Mr. Wagner. From what they can see, you're doing just what they told you. They got nothing to tell them any different here.
But what if they found out? What if they know that you're working on the case? What if they know about it? They might kill Myra. I'd never forgive myself. I never should have told you about it. I should have taken care of it myself. They'll kill her. I know they will. They'll kill her because you're working on it. The way it is now, she hasn't got a chance.
No, you're wrong there, Wagner.
Hmm?
The odds are on her side now. 10:45 p.m. Henry Wagner and I left the meeting place. About a mile down Deer Canyon Drive, Wagner dropped me off, and then he started down Benedict Canyon Drive and continued on home. I met with Frank, Lieutenant Gorham, and Sergeant Gil Encinas, and we started back on foot. We cut off the road and waited on the hill overlooking the meeting place. Frank told me that they'd seen no activity on the road while Wagner and I were making the meet. We moved in closer. 11:30 p.m., no sign of the kidnappers. The moon came up, and we could see the white string across the road. In a patch of manzanita, we could see the shoebox containing the dummy packages of money. We waited. Midnight, 1:30 a.m., still no sign of the kidnappers. 2:30, 4. At 4:45 a.m., the sun came up and Frank and I left the area. Lieutenant Gorham and Sergeant Gil Encinas continued to stake the meeting place. If the kidnappers had been in the vicinity, we'd missed them. Our only course now was to wait for them to contact Henry Wagner again. 8:15 a.m., Frank and I checked out and went on home to take a shower and get something to eat. At 11:12 a.m. Thursday morning, we checked back into the office.
Rough night, huh?
Yeah, there's nothing to show for it.
Anything from Gorman and Encinas?
No, I don't see anything.
There's one thing I found out.
What's that?
I need a heavier coat for nights.
Yeah?
Saw an ad in the magazine. Advertised those English duffel coats. Look real good.
What?
Duffel coats. Wore them in the North Atlantic during the war. You know, Joe, they're real heavy. Got a hood that comes up. Should be real warm.
A hood?
Yeah, you know, like a monk wears. When you aren't wearing it, look just like a collar. When it gets cold, you raise up the little gimmick, and there you are, warm as anything.
You know, Frank, somehow I just can't see you in there.
Yeah? Well, I noticed you weren't any too warm last night. Next time we do duty like that, I'm going to be ready for it.
Yeah. Just like a monk. I'll get it. Homicide Friday. Yes. Oh, yes, Mr. When was that? Uh-huh. Yes, sir, right away. Well, that's it.
Huh?
The Wagner woman. She's home.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
Friends, you'll remember some months ago, we read you our first report, the 6 months report on the effects of smoking. Then more recently, we read you the 8 months report. Now, here is the latest one. The full 10 months report confirms again.
No adverse effects on the nose, throat, and sinuses of the group from smoking Chesterfields.
This from a medical specialist who is making regular bi-monthly examinations of a group of people from various walks of life. 45% of them have smoked Chesterfield for an average of over 10 years.
After 10 full months, the specialist reports he observed no adverse effects on the nose, throat, and sinuses of the group from smoking Chesterfield.
That's the report. Buy much milder Chesterfield, regular or king size. The cigarette that's best for you.
Okay.
And now our other sponsor, Iron Lung.
Yeah. Get yours inflated.
After 9 months of testing, she's definitely pregnant. Okay.
Fun we get to have.
Yeah.
I love Dragnet. I've been watching it since.
I do too.
I remember watching the 67 show when it was new.
Cool. Yeah. In living color, yes.
Yeah.
If that was living color.
Except we didn't have a color
because
TV.
Because I'm so much younger, I saw it in syndication, but still appreciated the same episode you guys were watching. oh, man. Yeah, I remember. Do you guys have memories from your childhood and they don't make sense?
That was more my late teens, early 20s.
No, this was not being a drug-addled individual or whatever, but not saying that you were, but no, I remember seeing Dragnet, and I was like at a camp or something, and it's like, well, I'm going to be at a camp watching Dragnet, but it was,
sure
it
wasn't juvie?
It was a vacation. No.
Kind of scare you there?
Pretty sure. Yeah, well, see,
yep.
The kicker on that, Dale, is at juvie, they don't let you watch TV. But, yeah, okay. So, that wasn't it.
No, should they?
Yeah, but I did. I tell you.
I remember,
I
remember going to camping grounds and seeing Charlie Chan movies, but I don't remember ever seeing Dragnet at a camping ground.
But yeah. Were they shown on a sheet draped over a string tied to two trees?
Something like
or
that, yeah.
What were
something like that.
Okay,
yeah.
No, this was I think what it was like a cabin rented, and it was kind of forest-like, but they had electricity, and they had a color TV. So I think I was vacationing with some friends or something, or with the family of friends or something like that. But I was young and it didn't make sense. Yeah, it still doesn't make sense, but that's okay. I enjoyed that because Henry Morgan and Jack Webb had a great dialogue on TV. I don't recall seeing the television program when Jack Webb had a different actor partner. I think there is one out there, but I don't remember it very well.
You know, what's interesting is at the time of Jack Webb's death, he was planning to bring Dragnet back once again to television. And I wonder if he would have tried to bring Harry Morgan back again.
Hey, he could have. Harry Morgan was great.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had a long run in the MASH series, so it could have happened.
Oh, yeah, and a big long run in Western movies as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
I liked him in The Shootist. He was good in that. As a
what blows me away is
Sheriff.
All the different ties that, because it goes from there, and then there's ties to Julie London, who I saw in television, but then due to the amazing internet, I was able to discover all of her musical albums and everything she did. And then she was in some movies before that. She had a stop-and-go career. It was very weird.
Yeah, she was married to Jack Webb for a while, and then married
Bobby
Troup.
Yep.
And then Bobby Troup appeared in several episodes of Dragnet, and then both Bobby Troup and Julie London ended up in Jack Webb's Emergency.
Right. And then is Peggy Lipton related in some way, shape, or form? Maybe I'm wrong. No?
Not that I'm aware of.
The girl that was in Mod Squad, is she the daughter of Julie London? Was she?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to
look that up. Let's check that out while we wrap up the big string. The big string from Dragnet. We'll be back. Ta-da.
It's 11:30 a.m. Frank and I drove out to the Wagner home. The officers on stakeout told us that Mrs. Wagner had walked into the house at about 11 o'clock that morning. As soon as she'd gotten inside the house, she collapsed. The family doctor had been called, and she was treated for shock. Other than some scratches on her arms and around her face, she was unharmed. The officers told us that they'd been unable to interrogate her so far. We talked to the doctor, and he told us that we could talk to her until the sedative took effect.
Honey, these are policemen. They want to ask you a few questions.
What?
Police officers, honey. There's Mr. Friday and there's Mr. Smith.
Oh, yes.
They want to ask you some questions, dear, about the people who took you.
Oh, all right.
It won't take very long, Miss Wagner.
That's all right. I want to help you get them.
All right. Now, if you just tell us how it happened.
How it happened?
Yes, ma'am.
Sergeant, you have to do this now. Maybe later when she's rested.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Wagner. We haven't got much choice here. We'd like to get to the people who did this. If we wait until later, we might not be able to get them.
Yes, I didn't think of that. Well, if the doctor says it's all right, go ahead.
Miss Wagner?
Yes?
Do you know the people who did it? The people who took you?
No.
You never seen them before?
No, never.
All right, now, could you just tell us what happened?
I guess so.
They came to the door about 2:30.
Who were they, ma'am?
Well, I just saw a man. Later, when we got into the car, there was a woman, too.
All right, go ahead.
They told me that Henry'd been in an accident, that he'd been hurt, that he was at the hospital. Said they wanted to take me to him.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't know any different. I went with them. I thought that Henry was hurt. I didn't know any different.
You have to do this, officers. She's home, safe. That's all I care about. That's all that's important. Why don't you let her get some rest? Then you can talk to her. Talk as much as you want to. But please, you can see what this is doing to her.
Yes, sir. Now, look, this isn't any easier on us. We've got a job to do here, like we had when she was gone. We know how you feel, but we'd like to get to those people.
It's all right, Henry. I'm all right, dear.
Where'd they take you, ma'am?
First, I think they were going to take me to a house near here. I didn't notice the street, but it was near here. I'm sure of that. Then when we got near there, I knew that something was wrong, that they weren't going to take me to Henry like they said. I knew it then.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I told them to let me out of the car, said that they'd better let me go.
Mm-hmm.
The woman, she was in the back seat with me, said for me to keep my mouth closed. I tried to get out the door, and she hit me. Then the two of them got into an argument. The man started to yell at the woman that it wasn't any good, that they'd better forget the whole thing. And the woman said that they'd gone too far for that now, that they had to go through with it.
Uh-huh.
Well, then they put a blindfold on me, tied my hands and blindfolded me, and then they started to drive.
Well, at any time, did either of them use a name, you know, in talking to each other?
No, I don't think so. At least if they did, I don't remember it.
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Miss Wagner.
Well, then they started to drive. I couldn't see where they were going, but I know that they headed out the Arroyo Seco toward Pasadena. I could tell from the way we went. Then I heard the woman talk about the turnoff to get on the Seco. Right then, the man told her to shut up.
Yes, ma'am.
We drove for quite a while and then stopped. They made me get out and took me into a house.
Did you have any idea where you were at the time, ma'am?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, ma'am.
Well, they took me into the house and put me in a room. Tied me up. I couldn't move, couldn't do anything. They locked the door, and I could hear them arguing in the next room. The man was really telling the woman off. Said that she was a fool, that she'd really botched the whole thing up.
I see.
That night, they brought in a plate of food, told me it was time to eat. All there was were some prunes. That's what they fed me all the time I was there, prunes. Never did take the blindfold off.
Was there anything at all that would let you know where you were?
Oh, a couple of things. They're probably kind of silly, but maybe you can make something out of them.
What's that, ma'am?
Well, there was a clock that was in the room where they had me, one of those chime clocks, tolled every 15 minutes, like Westminster chimes.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't think it was a very big clock. Chime sounded small.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a train.
Trains?
Yes, every once in a while I'd hear trains going past. Sounded like they were near, maybe a couple blocks away, not much more than that.
But do you think that you could give us a description of the man and woman, Ms. Wagner?
Yes, I think so. First, I was so upset with thinking that Henry was hurt that I didn't notice, but I think I can describe them for you.
All right, ma'am, that'll be fine.
There's one thing, though.
What's that?
I'd be positive if I saw them.
12 noon. We continued to talk to the Wagner woman. She gave us a description of the man and woman who had kidnapped her and a description of the car they'd used. We called the information into the office, and a local and an APB were gotten out. We ran the description through R&I, but we got no make. 2:45 p.m. As one of the possibilities for identifying the locality described by Mrs. Wagner, Frank and I left the house and drove to the office of one of the milk companies in the city. We talked to the driver that handled the area in which Mrs. Wagner said the kidnappers were going to stop. He couldn't identify the man and the woman from the description. We checked two more milk companies, and on the third, we got a tentative identification. The driver of the route told us that we could be asking about a Mr. and Mrs. Thomas Harper, he thought. He gave us their address, and Frank and I drove out there. On the way, we called the names into R&I and had them make a check for us. They said they had a record on a Thomas Harper who answered the description. He'd served time in San Quentin and in Folsom penitentiaries. He'd been sentenced both times for armed robbery and ADW. There was no record on Mrs. Harper and no wants at the present time for her husband. 5:57 p.m.
Well, we better try it again, huh?
All right. Probably aren't in.
Mm-hmm. There's a car park down the street here. Could be theirs. Checks on that description we got from the Wagner woman.
I think somebody's coming.
Yeah, what do you want?
You Thomas Harper?
Yeah, that's right.
Police officers would like to talk to you.
What about?
Just like to talk to you.
All right, come on in.
What is it, Tom?
Cops.
What do they want?
Say they want to talk. I don't know what about.
Just a routine investigation.
Who are you trying to kid?
What do you mean by that, Harper?
It's Somebody's done something, you need a pigeon. I got a record, so I'm right for you guys to lean on.
What's the matter? You got something to worry about?
Not a thing in the world, but I know you guys, you're going to try.
What do you want, anyway?
Can you people tell us your activities for the past 4 days?
What for?
Just tell us, will you?
Tell us. You got an angle, you wouldn't be here. You're trying to pin something on us, and you know it.
You want to tell us what you've been doing?
We haven't left the house at all.
Can you prove that?
Prove it to who? You? You got no right to come in here and ask a lot of questions.
She's right. You haven't got any right to do that. Now, either you pull us in or you get out of here.
All right, Harper. I'm getting ready to leave anyway. We'll see you later.
Yeah, let's go, Frank.
Right.
You better call the office and have the house staked. As soon as Ms. Wagner feels better, we'll have her see if she can make an identification here, huh?
I don't think that'll be too hard, Joe.
Hmm?
Found this bill from the gas company on the table in there.
Yeah?
House in Pasadena.
Harper's mugshot had been pulled and sent to the Wagner home for identification. Mrs. Wagner was still under sedatives. 7:15 p.m., Frank and I drove out to Pasadena. We got in touch with the police department out there, and two officers were assigned to accompany us to the address on the gas bill. The house was unoccupied, and there were advertising papers strewn all about on the lawn. With the officers, we entered the house and went through it. In some of the rooms, there were pieces of furniture, and in the living room of the house, we found a mantel clock that chimed on the quarter hour. On an end table, we found a ball of white string that looked like the same type that had been used to mark the meeting place up on Deer Canyon Drive. In one of the back bedrooms, we found prune seeds scattered around on the floor. A stakeout was arranged on the house. We contacted the men watching the Harper residence and found that the suspects were still there. 9:56 p.m., Frank and I arrived back at the Harper home in Hollywood. The lights were out and the house was dark. Frank went around to the back of the house.
Yeah? What do you want this time of the night? Did you guys ever give up?
All right, Harper, let's get dressed. We want to talk to you downtown.
You tying a pinch to me?
You called it.
For what?
Kidnapping.
You're out of your mind.
Come on, get dressed.
Who is it, honey?
Cops say we kidnapped somebody.
What?
Fuzz has an idea we kidnapped somebody.
You're kidding.
Afraid not, Ms. Harper. You better get dressed, too. Anybody else in the house?
Yeah, we take in boarders.
Don't get smart. Where's that door go?
Bedroom.
Just the one bedroom here?
That's right. We're roughing it.
Is the kitchen over here?
Yeah.
All right, come on. How about the bath?
In there.
All right, we'll all go. Come on. All right. Let's go back to the kitchen. This door go out the backyard?
You're a cop. You figure it out.
Okay, Frank.
Everything all right in there, Joe?
Yeah, fine.
You ain't kidding about this kidnap thing, are you?
Nope. Let's go.
What makes you figure it might be us?
You got a house in Pasadena?
Why do you ask that?
Have you got one?
No.
You're lying. Property records in Pasadena say you have. We checked the house. Matches the one we're looking for.
That right?
That's right. We got the woman you kidnapped. She's identified your picture, you and your wife.
She couldn't identify me. I haven't got a record.
You ain't taking me no place. Frank, get out of my way.
Hold it. Hold it right there.
All right, come on. On your feet.
I'll shake. He's clean. Hands behind you.
I told you what had happened. I told you we should let her go right away. I told you.
Oh, shut up.
You and your bright ideas. 10 grand, easy. You and your bright ideas. Well, look what it got us.
Look, Buster. You didn't yell when you thought of getting your hot little hands on that dough. You were all for it then. Well, we lost. What do you want me to do about it? Break down and ball?
Should have known from the beginning. I had nothing but trouble with you from the start. Always wanting something easy. Always wanting big money. Never satisfied.
That's the trouble with kids. Bad losers. Great winners, but bad losers. Well, you're a big boy now. You lost. That's all there is to it. Stop whining.
Easy for you to say. If you get through with me, I'll be in for life. You got no record.
She has now. Let's go.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On November 10th, trial was held in Department 98, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you, George Fenneman. Friends, only the modern cigarette, Chesterfield, gives you this scientific evidence on the effects of smoking. No adverse effects on the nose, throat, and sinuses of the group from smoking Chesterfields. And only the modern cigarette, Chesterfield, gives you premium quality in both regular and king size. Now, I know Chesterfield is best for me and best for you. Buy them, regular or king size. Either way, they're much milder to give you all the pleasure the modern cigarette can give.
Thomas Fenton Harper was tried and found guilty of kidnapping. He was sentenced to life imprisonment in the state penitentiary, Folsom, California, without possibility of parole. His wife, Alice Mabel Harper, received a like sentence and is now in the California Institution for Women, Corona, California. Ladies and gentlemen, would you give a few dimes to help a child out of the smallest prison in the world, an iron lung? Well, that's what you're doing when you join the 1953 March of Dimes. Remember, crippled children are depending on your help. So give your dimes and your dollars to the 1953 March of Dimes.
Sure, now they're worried about iron lung.
You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Virginia Gregg, Jonathan Hull. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Sound
off for Chesterfield. Either way you like them, regular or king size, you'll find premium quality Chesterfields much milder.
And delicious.
Chesterfield has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Boom.
This has been a Quinn Martin production. Oh, wait, no.
Supposed to come out
Mark
with
seven.
hand in the chisel. Ding!
Yep, the Mark 7 production, I think it was.
Yes. It was. And that's it for today's shows about pearls. Well...
Well,
other
but
than
we have another pearl of wisdom.
No.
Right?
Hello?
Yeah. Hello? Hello?
Yeah, we'll make one up. Erie House Radio proudly presents a third and perhaps final Gar's pearl of wisdom.
Funny thing about a shoebox. It's not a shoebox until you put shoes in it.
Okay.
Yeah! That sounded like it hurt. Tomorrow, more stories about pearls. Well, one big one. CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Yeah, CBS Radio Mystery Theater tomorrow night, The Deadly Pearls at 6:30 Eastern. And then what happens at 8 o'clock right after?
I go to the bathroom.
Oh, tomorrow night at 8. Are you running a repeat tomorrow, Gar?
Somebody cue Gar.
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay. So check out them Twitches tomorrow night at 8, right after Erie House Radio.
Yep.
Gonna have to start scheming way ahead of time for Halloween. I just got my Halloween vacation days all approved. So it's time for the evil scheming to begin. And folks listening, such as good old Bob, who joined us later in the show, Bob's Bane, and anybody else that's listening in, we're not looking at right now, let us know on the Facebooky page there if you got some suggestions for Halloween. But if not, fear not, we'll come up with something good.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you got a few ideas there.
I got a couple knocking around. Got a few little things.
Yeah, that would be the case.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern, for the live show.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him too.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
What happened to the girl?
Don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Door, please. Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah, yeah. So that was fun.
Wow. Who's the other caller there? Is that Gar there too?
I don't know where the background sound is coming from.
No, there's another caller online.
Oh.
Online.
That's me. Hello.
Which one are you?
That's you and you?
I'm both. My cell phone's dying or something. I don't know. It's on dialysis or something.
Ah.
So I called using the other phone in this day of having way too many phones.
Yeah. This is true.
Hey, Dale, I did something interesting this week. Of course, you know who I'm talking about when I say Coon Dog O'Karma.
Yes. I saw that. I saw somebody repost it from you. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually was there and videotaped it. And I'm wrapping up, before the weekend's done, I'll be wrapping up that video production of his little ceremony where he became Coon Dog or Dave O'Karma Boulevard.
Yes, Dave
O'Karma
Boulevard.
We did it out in the middle of the boulevard during rush hour and tested out my little microphone, and my golly, I got great audio.
Nice.
You never know.
So are you saying you know someone that turned into a road?
No.
Yes.
No. Coon Dog O'Karma was the only person, the only human to ever beat Mushmouth Mariana in a pizza eating contest, which is constantly held on the Houlihan and Big Chuck show.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
With Mushmouth Mariana Pichetti finally beaten by Coon Dog and Chris the Dog.
Yeah, and didn't they try to race him against the bear, too?
I don't know.
They had a trained
Chris,
bear.
I think, was a German Shepherd, if I'm not mistaken.
German Shepherd, yeah, that wasn't really fair either. But
I know. It wasn't fair to the dog.
The dog won.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
But look at how his career was shortened.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Puppy.
That's why I said the only humans to beat Mushmouth.
The only human to beat him.
Yes.
While we were listening to the amazing radio episodes, I saw this one post, and it nailed me. I was like, what? A family comes home, and their roof is gone. In place is a tarp with a note attached to the door that says, "Sorry, we made a mistake. Signed a contractor." Someone took their roof off, left the tarp in place. I was like, whoa.
And they leave
shame
a note.
On me.
They left a note. Sorry,
a
there was
note.
A mistake. Yeah, a note.
We had a small oopsie.
Life is so funny, and the internet makes it even better because we see it.
Yep.
Wow.
It doesn't rain tonight.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, I mean, the tarp is in place, so maybe, you know, it'll keep most of the water out. But, my gosh. It was the whole roof just tarped and a note.
Well, so they took off all the shingles. Is that what they did?
The shingles and apparently the under material, which is like a particle board or something for the underlayment. Because
if
they were replacing someone's
roof in.
Yeah, they were replacing an entire roof. So they gutted the roof and they put a tarp in place and they were like, oops, we're at the wrong address. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
I wonder if insurance covers that.
And then, like, if it's you, you can't get mad at the neighbor. It's not the neighbor's fault. The workman is a moron.
Yeah. You got a neighbor on the other side of the fence going, over here, over here.
Yeah. Run.
And after they ripped off half of the roof, you know. Oh, boy.
Run against the horror hose. He'll get you.
Oh, even worse, yeah. Well, it didn't happen to me. I just saw
that
blurb. So, yeah, crazy.
I just got parked.
I saw something else. Go ahead.
The cat.
Oh, no. I saw something else this week that said, dating over the age of 40 is like going to Goodwill, looking for something that's in good shape and doesn't stink.
That's not a fair thing to. Thing to say about me, Gar. I'm telling you.
Well, it just these are the things that make me giggle while the rest of the world burns. You know.
As burning it is.
And burning it is. Yeah, I went and got some. The Veterans Administration ran out of medications, and boy, am I on a lot of them. But they ran out of something. They said, "Well, if you, yeah," and one of them was a fish oil thing, and it's a gel cap with fish oil, and I'm like, okay, whatever. And they ran out, and they said, "But if you want, you can go to your local grocery store or pharmacy, and they have them." And I, you know, and it was like, they were like $36 a jar. And like, but it's buy one, get one free. And I was like, well, let's load up. Okay. Yeah. And then right before
I call that an impulse purchase.
Yeah, right. Right before they rang me up, the girl says, there's a variation in the dosage. And I was like, but don't grow gills in a tail. I'm not worried about it. You know, it's a fish oil. Come on. Oh. You know,
you gotta watch how you use that stuff. That could be the good stuff, man.
Well, it's more expensive than gasoline.
That's good stuff.
You know, I was like, when she mentioned the price.
Oil.
Yeah, when she mentioned the price, I was like, wait, I know we're running out of gas. Are we running out of fish?
Yes. We are running out of everything.
We're running out of everything. Enjoy it while
supply chain issues here.
Yeah. This is something that's fun that all three of us have experienced. All of the wacky, zany changes in society that we understand that we've lived through. You know, it's just amazing. From radio, television. The telephone calls, the telephone itself, crazy.
I don't know. If I were in charge, I'd be playing my fiddle.
I'd be playing too.
Why not fiddle around?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, mine would sound like this. That's how mine
would
sound.
From the school of Jack Benny.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Jack Benny, I just recently found a bunch of live Jack Benny bloopers, and I'll be cutting those up into segments
to
share here on Erie House, Dale.
Ooh, maybe we could have a Jack Benny night or something.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't have to. I mean, we could just use it like, you know, when we get done with the show or something, have some extra time, and we could hit the wheel with it or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Nickel in the machine, all that, yeah.
There's another nickel.
Yeah. But these are all things that happen live on Jack Benny's program. And,
mm-hmm.
There's got to be some great moments.
There's some good stuff in there, yeah.
There's got to be great moments.
Were you guys ever entertained by the Soupy Sales television program?
I think I have vague memories of it.
Yeah.
Vague, kind of have. I was awful young.
Yes. I think it was a
show for adults when it was first on.
Yes.
It really was.
Yeah, it was a balancing act between kid and adult fare or something. I found the the skits where this is amazing because it's so funny. It's, all it is a hairy glove. That's all, just a hairy glove and a funny noise. And repartee and hilarity ensues. I thought those were hilarious. In fact, there's one I play on Horrible Horror, which is Soupy Sales is sitting there, and he finds in the garden a spider that can play the piano. And he's amazed by this, and Alice Cooper drops by and goes, "Ah, I can use this guy for my act. Here's $1 million contract." And then Fang shows up and goes, "A spider?" And he takes a hammer and crushes it. And so Alice Cooper tears up the contract, and Soupy Sales is crushed. And then he pulls out another contract for White Fang or whatever that guy's name is. And he goes, you want him in the act? He's like, "No, I need someone to kill bugs." But you know, but it was just such a simple premise of a hairy
Alice
glove.
Cooper was on Soupy Sales.
Yes. Oh, you have to look it up. Yes. Before my time, but I saw it and I was like, "This is hilarious." Funny stuff. And it's again, the premise is just a hairy glove, a hairy hand, arm thing, you know, and a monster. For the kids. And the kids got it, and the kids rolled. And as an adult, I'm sitting there giggling at this. So, you know, great TV. And I'm sorry I had to dive out on the program earlier, but I saw craziness going on with my ISP, and I had to correct it immediately because it was bad.
All is well now, yes.
I'm waiting for that to end. Or for them to fix it. That would be the ending. But it hasn't happened yet. So, all right, guys.
Good luck.
Good luck. Yeah, well, you know. I'm still the squeaky wheel, you know.
Yep.
They're going to send four guys over to go, "Yeah, we're here to replace you."
Pella still owes me a door. This is like incredibly.
Oh, right. Oh, you're still dealing with the door.
They called again. They were supposed to come tomorrow. They called to cancel again today. But we're only moving it out 1 week. And my wife goes, she's been hanging around me too long. She goes, "That's okay. You just made me $50. My husband owes me. I knew you wouldn't be here."
Wow.
Yeah, I teach him good. I teach him good.
Wow. So, is it ever going to get to the point of litigation on your side, or you don't know?
So far, I have been able to negotiate a more advantageous
a
price.
A deal.
Yes.
Right, there you go.
Yes.
Well.
I hit their website and said, "What do you do in the company?" I didn't say anything about who it is, but it was on Pella's site, coincidentally. When they deliver you a door with broken glass twice. I said, I don't know. If I was the owner of that company, I'd make that guy's phone ring right about now. And within an hour.
In their window, people.
Right.
And within an hour, they were calling us. And I didn't even mention the Facebook thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, you know, this isn't our fault, and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, come on, I lost a day of work. Or, you know, a vacation that I would have rather spent not seeing you.
Mm-hmm.
You call at the last minute, I couldn't get it back. I said, "So I want two things. I want you to come on a Saturday. and I want a little break on the price, you know."
Mm-hmm.
And the guy went away, and he came back and took off a few $100s. So that was good.
If you can finally get what you're shooting for, you'll be set.
Oh, yeah. We were going to get a screen door from him, but I'm glad we didn't. We're just going to do that ourselves. We're going to go to Lowe's or Home Depot, and just they're not too hard to do screen doors.
I've been in communication with digging up whatever I can, and I ran across someone that's having a similar problem that I had. And they said, you know what? We started sending in complaints to the FCC, and all of a sudden stuff happened. I'm like, what? Okay.
Sometimes you got to do what you got to do, man. You got to play hardball.
Yeah.
I don't. Nobody likes to, but sometimes you got to.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow. It's been said many times to me.
Or be taken advantage of. You know, those are your choices.
Yeah.
I prefer being a little... standing up for myself a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I've been doing that, and I don't know. Now, I'm getting a whole lot more attention work side in this area, but maybe eventually they'll find whatever it is that's wrong and fix it. But I'm no longer holding my breath. Definitely that. At first, I was like, oh, it's going to work. It's going to work. It's not working.
But it's not working.
It's not working. So if I had a product, like I was saying about Horror Host that actually made it, where they had a sponsor and they were making money and this and another. Yeah.
Those
a
few
more heads would roll.
Far between.
Well, like, okay, let's just say, all right, for example, Misty Brew was making some money when she had
a
sponsor of Coors Light whoever.
When she was on television, yeah.
When she was on television. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, had Coors Light as well, and or other things. And, you know, so she was, I'm sure that
she was,
you know.
A couple things working for her.
Yeah. But she was probably, you know, somewhat making enough money to survive on back then. And she had sponsors and a channel behind her. I don't have that, so I'm kind of, you know. If it was a circumstance where there were bigger heads involved, I think that the service would be a bit different and more correctly fixed than it is with me just sitting here going, my internet doesn't work. You know. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But like I was saying, my argument is they're destroying my product, but, you know, I can't really jump up and down too hard on that. They are, but, you know.
Yep.
Anyway, well, I'm gonna scooch out of here.
All right, my man.
Well, then, if you're going to be doing that scooching, you know, then we better scooch in. Jimmy Durante.
There you go.
Turn on the three spotlights. Here he comes. Here he scooches in.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What for this sake but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
And now, until next time, till we meet again in the same place, I remain as always, obediently yours.